One of the most dangerous times for those of us in sales is the time between meetings with our prospects. In this week's episode of the Sales Playbook Podcast, I'm going to share my thoughts as to why I feel that way, but more importantly, I'm going to show you what you can do about it. My name is Paul Castain from Castain Training Systems, and I'm the author of the YourSalesPlaybook.com blog and your host for the Sales Playbook Podcast. I've personally trained over 30,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready because school is now in session. This week's episode of the Sales Playbook Podcast is brought to you by our Closers Academy download. I'm going to be sharing all the juicy details at the end of the podcast, but if you'd like to have a look at it right now and you're not in the car driving and you can pull over safely, please visit yoursalesplaybook.com/closemore. So there's this really dangerous part of the sales cycle, and in the spirit of getting directly to the point, it involves the time between prospect meetings. So again, we're not talking about when you're face to face with a prospect. I'm talking about that space, that time between meetings. Maybe they're supposed to do something and you're waiting, or perhaps you've done something and you've sent it along and you're trying to follow up with them, whatever. But it's the space and that time between meetings. So now, why do I feel this is such a dangerous part of the whole sales cycle? And I actually feel that as much as I've spoken about this in the past, I actually think it's worse right now because of the pandemic. So let me just share my reasons in general why I think this is a very dangerous time for you and all sales professionals. It's because you're not there to keep the momentum going. Now think about it. When you're face-to-face or in a Zoom meeting or on a conference call or whatever, phone call with a prospect, you can sort of control that situation. And remember, when I speak about controlling a situation, and those of you who don't know me, I don't mean being manipulative or controlling or an ass. I mean, you can ask questions and you can even see when somebody or hear when somebody is disengaging, right? You can kind of get them back on track, or you have the ability to say, you know, is there something on your mind? I mean, you know, you seemed excited about it before, and now you're right there, and it's kind of hard to blow someone off who is right there in a meeting with you. So you're not there to keep that momentum going. I think that before the pandemic, we were living in a world where people were incredibly distracted. But how about now with, you know, the pandemic? I mean, people are quite a bit more distracted. You know, some businesses are just fighting to stay alive right now. I think that's a little bit of a distraction. Some of them have had to do layoffs. I think that's a bit of a distraction, right? Some of these decision makers, in fact, a lot of them right now, are doing the work of other people. Why? Because they had to downsize when times were crazy. And some of them are still struggling. So that's a big distraction. But also, you know, when you're not there, you can't address concerns because you don't even know if they have any. You also are not there to kind of reinforce the value, because again, somebody might be starting to lose. Haven't we had those situations, by the way, where it's almost, and I call it the whole bright, shiny object syndrome. Somebody is going hot and heavy with wanting your solution, and then they disappear just as fast. And now they're ghosting you and not getting back to you, or dragging ass, or not doing the things they're supposed to. And it's just, you know, you were kind of like the flavor of the second, right? But you're not there to get them back on track. But also, because you're not there, you might have other people whispering in this decision maker's ear, or two, right? Or both ears if they have two. But if you think about it, you have stakeholders. I mean, how many times have you had something where the person that brought you in was all for it? They wanted what you were selling. But then you have somebody else, maybe, and I'm not throwing the accounting people under the bus, but it might be the accountant, you know, the accounting people. It could be someone over in operations. Now I've got, by the way, now I've got the accounting people and operations people just saying, this guy sucks, I hate him, right? So you have that. You have also, you have your competitors whispering in their ear. They might be steering them in a different direction. They could be bad-mouthing you. They could be saying, nah, you don't need this kind of widget. You need this kind of widget. And it just so happens it's the widget that they're selling. So, you know, I can go on and on about this, but what I really want to talk about today is what you can do about it. So again, I want to be very, very clear. I really believe that time, haven't we heard that expression, time kills all deals? But it's that time and space between those meetings where we're most vulnerable because we're not there, we're not influencing them. And you might be saying, well, yeah, we can, not in a meeting. Well, if they're not taking your call and if they're not really, you know, responding to your email or getting back to you on some of the things that they're supposed to or whatever, I really don't know that you're in control anymore. I don't, you know, and I would have to say that you need to tighten that leash a little bit. So let's talk about what you can do about it. I think one of the things we really have to talk about, because a lot of times in sales training, we notice that people are offering things that are sort of after the fact, and it turns into a Band-Aid approach. I want to talk about some things that are proactive instead of reactive, and then we'll talk about some reactive measures. So we want to be able to first begin with at least this two that I'm going to give you, but there's a lot more that I usually talk about in the training that I do. But for now, I want to at least arm you with two preventative measures that you're going to do at the front end of your deals. The first one, and actually even the second one, if you've been listening to me for a while, you've heard me talk about these things. It's not going to be anything new. But my rule of thumb is always, if you find yourself saying, I know that, or that sells 101, or that's basic, that's awesome if you want to feel that way. But you need to have a little bit of tough love here and a little bit of a reality check. If it's, I know that, if it's, I heard that, Paul talks about it all the time type of thing, that sells 101 and you're doing it, okay, point taken. But if it's, I know that, that sells 101, Paul talks about it all the time, and you haven't done shit with it, you need to shut your mouth and do it, right? I mean, seriously, you gotta. So the two measures on the front end for now, knowing that there are other things you could be doing too, is the first thing is we call it reverse engineering the decision. You want to reverse engineer that decision. So what do I mean by that? When you're meeting with a prospect, and this needs to be done early in the whole sales cycle. You're meeting with them, you're about to do your needs analysis, and you could do this anytime during that first meeting. Simply ask them, hey, listen, and you word it the way you want, but I always like to say, I realize that we haven't come to this point yet, but ideally, if you decide to move ahead, ideally, when would you like to see the solution in place? And you use the, and I want you to use the language of your industry, and actually their industry, right? Well, and mine, if I were talking to you about sales training, I might say something like this. I realize we haven't gotten to this point yet, but ideally, when would you like to see a new sales training program launch, right? Or sometimes in the software industry, ideally, when would you like to see this implemented? So they give you the date. So right now, I'm going to say that you want to hire me to do a virtual sales kickoff for your team, and you want me to do it on January 14th. So now that you've provided me with that, and it's almost like an equation that we're setting up, right? So we have ideal delivery date, implementation date, launch date, whatever the language is of their industry. Now you're going to subtract out your typical lead time. How long does it usually take you for delivery or to implement or to launch or whatever it is? Now, in my case, I always work on at least a 30-day delivery, right? Or a 30-day implementation or launch or whatever it is. So if you want to hire me to do a virtual sales kickoff and you're looking at doing this on January 14th, then what I'm going to say to you, okay, again, I know we haven't come to this yet, but I just want to put this out there to make sure that you're in a position to do this because as of right now, I have that date available and I can do it. Just to let you know, it takes me, we're working on about a 30-day turnaround. And in there, under normal circumstances, we're working on a 30-day turnaround. But we're also going to lose a week because of the holidays this year, right? I mean, we always do. The holidays didn't just start this year. So what I'm going to do in that case is tag on an extra week. So what I'm going to say to them, so in order for us to be able to launch this sales kickoff program on January 14th, I'm going to need, for us to have a conversation and a decision no later than the first week in December. And then I'm going to ask a simple question. Is this doable as far as you're concerned? Will you be able to give a decision then? Because that's going to impact my ability to deliver for you. And most people at that point are going to say yes, that, yeah, absolutely. They're not going to say, well, that's unreasonable. I mean, you need what you need in order to do this, right? So what I'm going to do then is I'm going to give myself a homework assignment. I'm going to say, well, my first homework assignment that I'm going to have is I'm going to send you a calendar invite for a conversation to be had on December 4th, say, right? I'm just picking a random date. On December 4th, and it's going to say, discuss sales kickoff decision with Paul Castain. Be a quick call. This way we know where we stand with each other. If it's a yes, awesome. I make my living on the word yes. If it's a no, hey, you know what? It's not as good as a yes, but at least we know where we stand with each other. It doesn't become like one of these awkward dating things. Should I call? Should I not call? I wonder if he'll call me. I don't know. I don't know if she was into me or not. And we can just have closure and get on with the other 40,000 things that we each have on our plates. Is that okay? Again, I'm getting these little agreements as we go along. So now all these little commitments, it's going to kind of get them used to saying yes to me. And that's what we want to do. We want to do it in a non-manipulative way. So that's the first thing that we're going to do. We're going to reverse engineer that decision. So now we're tightening the leash a little bit. In that moment, we get to assess if they're serious about this. Maybe they say to us, I don't know, whatever. You know, like when I hear that, and I'm getting that kind of vibe from someone, this isn't someone that I should put a lot of hope and a lot of effort into getting this thing done by the end of the year, right? So, you know, if I'm asking that question, ideally, when would you like us to come in to do sales training or sales kickoff? I don't know, sometime next year. This is not going to get a high priority on my list. Does that mean I put him in the shit pile? No. It just means that, especially now, coming into the final lap of 2020 after the crazy year we've all had, I need to put my efforts on the highest probability prospects right now. So again, I want to be very clear. I'm not going to dismiss them. I'm not going to tell them to piss off or F off or any of that other stuff. It's just going to get a different level of priority. And how cool is it that we know pretty much minutes into the meeting? So that's a really important thing. But let's think positively and just kind of, you know, focus on them giving us a very specific delivery date, launch date, implementation date, and now we're able to reverse engineer. So once we do that, what's really cool now is that now we can always go back to the delivery date. So now it's not about you being a pain in the ass. Now it's not about you being needy or trying to get your commission check or make that year-end bonus or get it done in time for the holidays. It's about you honoring their deadline. So, and what's beautiful about a deadline is that it's kind of taking you out of the picture, them out of the picture, and focusing on almost this inanimate object. This whole deadline thing. But now, I want to get into the second technique. And again, I want to be clear, there's a lot of things we could be doing on the front end to make that time between meetings just a little less risky for us. But here's the second one. And another one that I've talked a lot about, and it's the foreshadowing technique. When we're going to foreshadow something that could easily happen. And just think about it in the movies, foreshadowing. Sometimes you'll see somebody is, hiding a gun in the woods. And that, yeah, you almost know that somewhere along the line they're going to use the damn gun, right? So in this case, what we're foreshadowing is something that might happen during the sales cycle. And the reason why we're doing it is so that we almost get their agreement up front, how they're going to handle it, and so that later on you have a lifeline that you can turn to and say, hey, you remember we talked about this? There was very real probability this might happen. Here we are in the moment. And when we talked about it, back when we first started, we both agreed that we would do this. So let me give you, I'm actually going to give you three examples of foreshadowing just so that we can really cement the point with you. So the very first example that I'll give you that I might say to someone, you know, at some point during the evaluation process, you might start to second guess your feelings as far as moving ahead with the solution. Yeah, and especially moving ahead with the solution during the pandemic. Well, that's when you're going to need to remind yourself that what we've been talking about is actually a cost-saving measure. Now, I actually gave a couple examples here because it might not be a cost-saving measure. It might be cost-saving. It might be revenue-generating. It might be morale-boosting. It might be time-saving. So, and then I kind of finish the foreshadowing thought with them by saying that's going to be the time that you got to double down and you got to keep moving because time is of the essence here, right? We've lost a lot of time this year with the pandemic. So that's the first example. If you feel that somebody later on might be holding back or delaying because of the pandemic, why not get that kind of out in the open in the beginning, get them to kind of address it, and kind of give them that future jolt of confidence why it's important. And the reason why you want to do it in that moment is because in that moment, they have lots of piss and vinegar early in the process. It's later on sometimes that people just, I don't know, that was so last month, or, you know, new challenges are on their plate, or they've had a chance to think about it during that time between meetings. They might have had somebody whispering in their ear saying, I don't know, like, yeah, doing sales training during a pandemic, or I don't know, I mean, this is just seems kind of expensive, and, you know, we're tightening our belts right now. You guys get the deal. So that's the first example. We're going to call that one a pandemic specific type of foreshadowing. So I want you to think about what your preventative measure is going to be using the foreshadowing technique in a pandemic related type of scenario. That's number one. Number two, it could be a year-end blow off that you get, or a year-end stall, right? Aren't we coming up on that? We're coming up on that magical time. Once it hits a certain time, people love to tell you, well, let's just do this, you know, next year we'll revisit it. So what you want to do is preempt that. And you want to use the foreshadowing technique. You might want to say, you know what, coming up on year end, you might get the urge to postpone this until January. The challenge with that is that, you know, a lot of the time when you're putting things off until January, now you got to revisit and do all those other things on top of this thing we've been talking about. So it's not going to be just this that you've put off. Chances are you got other things that you move to it. So now you're going to have this stuff going on. Business usually picks up in January, and the probability of this getting put off again and you not realizing savings, whether it be time, money, revenue generation, increase in production, whatever it is that you guys have as far as your value prop, that's where you put that into the conversation. And then I kind of like to put this in there that, again, we were talking before, is that the problem with postponing something until January is that usually it's one of many things that you've postponed. So now January comes around and now you got to do all these things that you can be doing little by little, and then someday becomes never. So that might be a cute little phrase that you can add in there. Someday becomes never. Example number three. So this one I think is really important. And this is maybe you've dealt with a certain type of prospect before. Pardon me. You've dealt with a certain type of prospect before. You know they kind of get to a point where they go on radio silence, not getting back to you, or maybe you fear that they might think you're being a pain in the ass or something. So here's example number three. Well, now that I know your deadline, it might seem at times like I'm blowing up your phone, blowing up your inbox, etc., with the messaging. And it's simply because I take your deadline seriously. So again, after you ask them for that ideal delivery date, and you reverse engineer it and say, okay, you would need to be able to make a decision on December 4th. Is that doable? Right? And they say, yeah. And then what you could do there with the preemptive, with this whole, you know, foreshadowing thing, is you could say to them, you know, I just want to warn you. At times it might seem like I'm blowing up your phone or your inbox with messaging, but I just want you to know if I'm, you know, really over communicating, it's because I take that deadline seriously. And I also know that someday can sometimes become never. So I just wanted to just give you a warning about that. I take deadlines very, very seriously. And by the way, once you become my client, I'm really going to take deadlines seriously. If I tell you you're going to have that on the 14th, you're going to be able to take it to the bank. So the only way I can demonstrate that to you is during the courtship too. I want you to understand that I take deadlines very seriously. So again, I'm over-talking that, folks. I'm doing that because we're on a podcast right now. And that's what you're supposed to effing do on a podcast. So now that we've talked a little bit about preventative things you can do, and remember, I want to be clear, you might be thinking, well, there was just so much more he should have talked about when it came to, when it comes to preventative things on the front end. There absolutely is a lot more. In fact, at the beginning of the podcast, I am going to do a little sales pitch. I mentioned a download called Closers Academy. And in the Closers Academy course, we actually talk about a lot of preventative things that you can do to make it, you know, kind of reduce the amount of time you're spending and to set up safety nets for you between meetings. So let's talk about a few things that you can do now once you're in that period of time where, you know, you have to kind of keep in touch and you don't really know what to do. So the very first thing that I want to mention, I have a free download for you. And what it is, I put together, and some of you may have it, and even if you downloaded this before, unless you've downloaded it recently and you've done the assignment recently, I think you need to go through it again, and you should be doing this regularly. I put together a little workbook type of thing, free download, and I call it 33 Ways to Keep in Touch with, and I think I titled it at the time, 33 Ways to Keep in Touch with a Client Without Calling to Check In or whatever. But the whole point here is that I think the problem that a lot of us have and the challenge is we're sounding like every other sales rep because we're calling, hey, I'm just calling to check in, or hey, I'm calling to see, have you made a decision yet on this? And sometimes it could sound very needy, very salesy. We're sounding like every other sales rep. So what I talk about in this free download is I give you lots of ideas of how you can simply stay in touch with people without doing all those other desperate things and those other typical things. So if you'd like to download it, I want you to visit yoursalesplaybook.com/33ways. yoursalesplaybook.com/33ways. Now, this brings us to the second thing that you can do during that time between meetings. And I call this the delayed response tactic. I've never talked about this before anywhere where I write or I do podcasting or on LinkedIn. This is kind of material that I've reserved for other people. So this is brand spanking new stuff I'm going to share with you. Not rocket science. I don't think any of the stuff I'm sharing with you is rocket science. But I think it's the little things that I'm sharing with you that most of your competitors are not willing to do because of the little things. They want a big, sexy answer. I'm all about doing just a ton of little things better, because when you add up a ton of little things, they usually beat the shit out of the one bigger thing. Plus, seriously, the longer you're in sales, the harder it is to find the one big thing, because you've heard it all. You've been there, done that. And you're missing a lot of little things in your quest to find the big, sexy answer. So I call this the delayed response tactic. So let's just say that you and I are in communication on Monday, and you say to me on Monday that you say to me, quote unquote, I'll get back to you on Thursday with that information. right? It could be anything. It could be information. It could be decision. But whatever it is, they say Thursday, I'm going to get back to you. Now, this would work best in an email, what I'm talking about here, right? This is what I'm talking about. It's an email. We're communicating back and forth, and you answer my email, and you say, yeah, Paul, I have your information. I'm going to get back to you on Thursday with, you know, those items that you need or whatever. Don't respond right away. This is why we call it the delayed response tactic, because what you would probably be inclined to do is say, okay, thanks, or okay, I'll follow up on Thursday or whatever. Don't respond on Monday. What I want you to do instead on Thursday morning, or you could wait until noon or something like that if you haven't heard from them by a certain time on Thursday, then what you do is then you respond on Thursday, the day that they promised to get you whatever it is they're supposed to get you or get back to you or whatever, and you can respond then with something like, thanks, looking forward to receiving this today, so that we can stay on track with your December, you know, 6th deadline or whatever. Do you see how everything kind of goes back to that deadline? Now I'm not sitting here chasing a commission check. I'm not sitting here being desperate or needy. I keep going back to their deadline, what they did. So really what I'm showing them is that I'm taking their deadline seriously. And if they should get shitty, which they're not, right? But let's just say they're having a little meltdown that day. At that point, you could use the foreshadowing. You can reference the foreshadowing. Say, hey, you remember? I told you there might be times when you think I'm kind of, you know, blowing up your inbox, but, you know, my defense, you did tell me on Thursday you'd get back to me. I'm just simply saying, great, looking forward to getting it from you. You know, take your meds, dude, right? You tell them that they're just being kind of dicky with you, and that'll fix it. But seriously, so that's the next tactic. So far we have this 33 ways to stay in touch resource that I told you about that you can download for free. Next, we have the delayed response tactic, where you're not going to respond right away, but you're going to respond maybe on that day that the information's due, or if there's not a specific date that things were said, a few days later, just to kind of give them that gentle nudge, you can do that. Okay, so that's the second thing. The third thing you can do, there's something that I teach, and it's a tactic. It's called Concerns and Solutions. And it's just a simple document that you could attach. I would recommend that you avoid attaching a document and you put it in the body of the email, because it gets read. People have become, all of us, have become incredibly lazy. And sometimes there's an attachment, and that's too much work, even though it takes, what are we talking about, a second to do that? But if we put it in the body of the email, and we don't make it look like War and Peace, we keep it short and sweet, and it doesn't look intimidating, like it's going to take them the rest of their adult life to read it and respond to it and take action, I think you're increasing the probability. So my suggestion is, with Concerns and Solutions, is you put it in the body of the email. So what is Concerns and Solutions? It is a reiteration of the things that they were concerned about and how you are able to help them. In other words, what's your solution for it? So you might be looking to hire me as a sales coach, and one of your concerns that you shared with me, again, this is just for illustration purposes, you told me that you're very concerned because your sales are off dramatically because of COVID-19. And more specifically, you're concerned because things are off, you're really not taking action at the level that you should. You're not following through on things, and you really need somebody to hold you accountable. So what's the solution, right? That was the concern. And I made that kind of little wordy, but I'd make it less wordy in an email. Now, solution. I put, you know, built into my one-on-one sales coaching program is accountability. We are going to be in communication with each other every single week. Every other week, we'll be in communication with each other in a one-on-one session. But between sessions, we're going to have updates that you're going to be sharing with me and homework assignments to keep you on point. But also, to your concern about your sales being off during COVID-19, I can proudly tell you that I'm one of the only sales trainers out there who has had a sales training program in place that deals with how to sell during COVID-19, specifically how to prospect and get in front of opportunities. And I had it up and running within 2 weeks of the pandemic, you know, the shutdown and everything back in April. And it's been selling off the shelves ever since, right? And again, I'm just being extra wordy here so you guys understand the gist and the spirit of the remark. So the concern, you state their concern. Now, when you're stating a concern, I think the best way to do it is in their words and their phrases, because first of all, how do you object to something you've said? Secondly, it's a really powerful form of mirroring, which is a really good psychological tactic, because people love people who are what? Just like them. And the way you were probably exposed to mirroring was by a tactic that most people completely suck at it. And it's also been around for so long, and so many people have done it poorly, that everybody sees it coming like a train wreck from 1,000 miles away. A body language type of mirroring. Somebody tilts their head to the left. You tilt your head to the left. Somebody leans back. You lean back, and guess what? You start looking like a mime. So this is, you know, mirroring body language isn't the only way to mirror someone. In fact, one of the things I teach in my program is that you use other means that are not detectable or as detectable. I mean, you can certainly mirror things like words and phrases, behavioral style, the type of sensory language that people use. What I mean by that is you'll see that some people say things that are visual. I see what you mean, right? You have other people that are more auditory, right? And it's, well, I hear you. I hear that. Sounds like a plan, right? Sounds interesting. And then you have people that are more kinesthetic, that are more to the touch, right? And it's going to be, well, that feels right, or that doesn't feel like, you know, something that I'd want to do. You know, that kind of thing. So you can mirror other things. So, but with this concerns and solutions approach, use their words and phrases. So that's a good thing that you can do to keep in touch. And the reason why you're doing it also with their words and phrases is because it becomes a psychological trigger for them. A lot of the time when people are meeting with you initially, if you've done a very good thorough needs analysis, what happens is that it triggers emotions in people. So in that moment when they use a key phrase, make sure that you're jotting it down, because then if you use that key phrase again that they had used when they were in that emotional state, many times it triggers the emotional state that made them say, F this, I need to make a change. And you can get them back there. And that's what you need to do between meetings. Get them back there so that the momentum continues to move forward. The next thing that you can do is, and we talked about this recently on the blog, is I call it an easy button email. Use an easy button email. Sometimes people will hold off on something because it feels like it might be a hassle, might be time consuming. So all we're doing in an easy button type of email is just breaking down what happens next for them. And especially what I want you guys to think about is, in order for somebody to implement your solution, if it's pretty painless, and basically all they have to do is A, B, and C, and A, B, and C only takes this amount of time, and then you and your team take it from there, you've got to communicate that to people, especially now. Everybody's kind of in that scatterbrain type of mode. And I don't say that in a derogatory way. I'm talking about myself too. I mean, we're all just kind of all over the place right now. So if we have something that seems like it's going to be a hassle, we're going to avoid it. We have something that appears to be a hassle during a pandemic, guess what? We're really going to avoid it. Something that appears to be a hassle during a pandemic and at year end, we're going to certainly avoid it and postpone it until January. So we want to get ahead of that. So we want to do this kind of easy button thing. Someone had sent an email to me, and they didn't know the name of it, but they really used this approach and they did it brilliantly. And I forget, if you've heard me use the example, you're definitely going to hear me use a completely different example, like with the numbers that were involved. So don't think that I'm full of shit here. It's just, I don't remember the exact numbers, right? This is what happens when you get old, like Uncle Paul here. But what happened was, I had somebody send something to me and I was stalling, and they said, you know, Paul, we just want to let you know that, you know, once you agree to do this, we're going to run with it from there. And yeah, there'll be some time that we have to spend with you to get some answers and some decisions. But really, over the next 6 to 8 weeks, I would be surprised if it all added up to about 30 minutes of your time, whatever. But again, I don't remember the exact numbers, how many weeks, how much time, but it was a ridiculous amount. It was something like, at that moment, I was like, what the hell am I putting this off for? This is, I should have known that anyway, that this wasn't going to take much time. But they reinforced that. So you just want to kind of put that easy button in there. And if you don't have the ability to tell them how easy it's going to be, perhaps right now one of your assignments listening to this podcast is, how can I simplify this? I have clients that when we had this portion of our one-on-one coaching, they said, geez, this is not really a simple process. And then I turned to them and I said, well, how could you make it simple? What could you do? Is there something where you can go on site and you could take care of this for them? Is it something that you could put a teammate there? Is it something that you could have somebody on your service team helping them? Is there something where you can sort of do a pre-recorded maybe video or pre-recorded webinar walking them through some steps to make it easy? But we've got to find a way to simplify the process, right? So think about that user experience and how you could make it simple and how you can send your very own easy button. In fact, another one of your assignments here, I want you to create an easy button email. The next thing, and again, this is just kind of a, play with words type of thing, but I think they matter and they can trigger different emotions. And especially, I think a lot of sales is stimulus response. And we've made it so as sales reps. Seriously, we, over the course of time, we have, used certain phrases, calling to check in, calling to follow up. Have you made a decision yet? So instead of asking them if they've made a decision, I would, and you could change this around any which way you want, why don't you do a pattern interrupt here? And do something that they're not expecting. They're expecting, have you made a decision yet? And if they're a procrastinator, they go right into procrastination mode or blame it on another department. Yeah, I didn't get the TPS reports, Lumberg, and now I can't do this. So what you might want to do instead is ask them, what are your thoughts? You could do that in an email. You could do it in a call. Hi, Jane, it's Paul Castain from Castain Training Systems. I know I had sent along a proposal last week. I know we discussed it. I know that you had said that you should have a decision to me within 24 to 48 hours. I thought I'd give you a few days because I know that this is not the only thing on your plate. I was curious, what are your thoughts? See, that's a very different conversation than me chasing you down for a decision. I also think that one of your thoughts is a peer-to-peer conversation. Have you made a decision yet? It puts you up higher than me. Now, that's not an ego thing. I want to be very clear. I'd like to think that I put my clients up on a pedestal with how I treat them. So this is not an ego thing. It is simply, I really believe that when you put yourself beneath someone, especially during the courtship, where you're chasing them, you're waiting for their decision, it just, that power can be abused. And I think you're the one that suffers for it many times. So simple, and like anything else that you're learning from me or other thought leaders out there, it's, to me, I always tell my coaching clients, picture me and you with our lab coats on, and we're in the sales laboratory. We're going to be doing lots of experiments together. We're going to be trying things, and we're going to see what works well and what's disastrous. And the whole time, we're going to be making notes to self. This is going to be a constant work in progress. Okay, so that brings us to the last item. The last item is when, and this is going to hit home for many people, this is going to strike a chord, man, with you guys. What do we do when we're ghosted? So here we are. It's bad enough. We're between meetings. And all of a sudden we realize, I think I've been ghosted. So one of the things you can do, I know that what happens sometimes when you've been ghosted, it's almost like this inner competitor kicks in. And it makes you get more like aggressive. And I don't mean aggressive like, hey, effer, buy my damn thing. I'm gonna come down there, kick your ass. I don't mean that kind of aggressive. I mean, if we're calling them once or twice a week, now we're calling them four, five, six times. We start chasing them down like we're that loan shark looking for the vig, right, on The Sopranos. So we don't want it to become that. So what we want to do instead is here's, and there's a lot of things for this, by the way. Another thing that we talk about in the Closers Academy download is this was used on me. In fact, I'm going to give you two examples. One was used on me, one wasn't. I really am ashamed of myself when it comes to this. And it's one of these, right now you can't see it. I'm hanging my head because this is the kind of thing as a sales rep that pisses me off to no end. And when I tell you what it is, I guarantee you can say, yeah, that's not cool. I hate that too. But here I am, a sales trainer, supposed to be the advocate, the friend of the sales rep. I am Paul, friend of the sales rep, right? I feel like in a great battle, I could, you know, if there was a war, I could go there in front of you guys. This is Paul, friend of the sales rep. Let him pass. He is a good man. He comes from good people, right? So Paul, friend of the sales rep. And I kind of effed over the sales rep. So there was a solution, and I'll tell you exactly what it was. It's for Salesforce. And I was on board with it. And I'll never forget, it was the first year I was in business, and I have every excuse in the world. We were coming up on year end. In fact, yeah, I was in business about a year when I got off my head and said, I'm going to do this Salesforce thing. And they were giving me a really sweet deal on it, too. It was a joke how much they were charging me for this. And all of a sudden, I had some other things on my plate. It was the holiday, and I was that distracted person that I always talk about here. And the rep was calling me and emailing me, and I was just blowing them off and not responding. Now, just to be clear, and I'm not saying this to defend myself. I'm saying it so you understand the mindset of a decision maker. On my list of things to do wasn't jerk around the sales rep. You know, payback for all the times I've been jerked around. No, I got caught up. But still, kind of shitty, right? And I needed the solution. So the thing that cinched the deal for me is I got an email, and it was very kind, the email. The tone was wonderful. It wasn't condescending or a tone almost like the person was saying I owed them something or I'm an ass for not getting back or whatever it is. The title, the subject line of this email, if you want to jot it down, was simply, Paul, how should we proceed? And question mark, Paul, how should we proceed? And the person very quickly summarized kind of our experience together. Hey, when we, you know, hey, Paul, I know you've been busy. I've been trying to reach out to you. And, you know, I know you haven't gotten back to me. When we first got together, you mentioned you needed A, B, and C, and the reasons why you were considering Salesforce was A, B, and C or whatever, right? They gave me a very quick, succinct type of summary. And then they said, you know, at that point they mentioned that, you know, I've reached out several times, I realize you're busy, but, you know, I'm just wondering, how should we proceed at this point? And I got that, and I was like, I'll tell you how we should proceed. I should just get the damn thing done. It's, you know, I'm jerking you around, right? So I thought that was a kinder, gentler type of nudge that you can do, and it's different. So that's the how should we proceed approach. The other one is an approach, and I don't know. Oh, Chris Voss. I just went completely blank there for a minute. And this is from Chris Voss's work, and yeah, he does a lot of negotiation. He was a former hostage negotiator for the FBI. And what you can do is, and what's beautiful about this approach, it's a pattern interrupt, and it just goes something like this. In the subject line, I like to use someone's name only because we've all been taught from the time we were born to respond to the sound of our own name. So use their name, and if you were getting after me for the damn Salesforce thing that I was dragging ass on, you might put something like, you know, Paul, have you given up on the CRM solution we discussed? Better yet, when you talk about have you given up on, I think it's better to even focus on the outcome that they want, because people aren't interested in sales training. They're interested in what, you know, that sales training is going to do for them, the result of which. So if I were sending it to you, I might say something like, you know, if your name was Nancy, by the way. So if you're not Nancy, don't get all bent out of shape. But I might say to you, Nancy, have you given up on, you know, growing, you know, your revenue? Have Nancy, have you given up on reducing turnover? Or right now with the pandemic, Nancy, have you given up on, you know, navigating the, you know, the pandemic more effectively from a sales perspective? So you guys see what I'm saying there. So that's the other approach. So those are two approaches right there for when you feel you've been ghosted. You could either use the how should we proceed approach or the have you given up on blank approach. And what's beautiful is you can actually use both of these in a cadence. So if you try one and that doesn't work, you know, you give a little bit of time like you would in any type of cadence. And then somewhere in there, whether it's the next move or then, you know, maybe there's two more moves and then this, or one more move and then this, then you could do the how, or then you could do the have you given up on type of approach. And there you have it, folks. We have what? Several examples, two examples on the front end, what you could be doing, the reverse engineering the decision we talked about. We talked about from there, the other thing that you can do is the foreshadowing approach. And I gave you good three examples there to kind of drive that home. And then we talked about this free download that I have for you. And it'll help you come up with. And what's cool about the download, just a quick thing, is that not only that it's free, but I'm really teaching you to fish here instead of feeding you, which I think is just a better way to teach. So it's going to help you devise 33 ways to keep in touch. And what's beautiful about it, you're going to be less predictable and it's going to change things up. It's going to keep the courtship interesting. And right now, sales cycles are running longer. So if yours is taking longer to close, I don't want you to feel bad. These are the times we're living in. This has become par for the course right now. So, but what can we do now? Now that it's a longer courtship period, what can we do beyond I'm calling to check in, right? So how can we keep that courtship interesting? That free download, if you visit yoursalesplaybook.com/33ways. Then we talked about the delayed response tactic. We talked about concerns and solutions. We talked about the easy button email. We talked about kind of changing up your language a little bit. Instead of saying, have you made a decision yet? Asking them for their thoughts. And then we talked about two measures that you can put in place when you feel that you've been ghosted, whether it be the how should we proceed email, have you given up on blank email. By the way, those are both templates that I have that I share in the download that I told you that I'd mentioned. In fact, let's kind of go there very, very quickly. I've been getting a lot of emails from you guys lately. In fact, if you ever want to email me, I'm always here for you. You can email me, paul@yoursalesplaybook.com. paul@yoursalesplaybook.com. But you guys have been sending me a lot of emails on the topic of closing resources, and specifically how you can really close deals right now at year end with the pandemic. And I figured it would be a really good time for me to re-release a really cool download that I've pre-recorded, and it's called Closers Academy. And what's awesome about it, it's two 1 hour plus sessions. When I say 1 hour plus, each one will be probably in the 75 minute range, because I'm never cheap on the time when it comes to any of the paid resources that we offer. And so it's a two session download. There are a few PDFs that I include with it, including a PDF with over 100 questions that you could ask in your needs analysis. To give you some ideas, I'm not saying you should ask every one of these 100 questions, but I just want to give you some ideas so you can come up with better questions on your own. So if you'd like to learn more about this, and I'm hoping you do, not just so that, hey, I can make a few bucks, right? Passing the hat here, But some of you really concern me because we are now, what, 7 months into this pandemic and you haven't changed a thing. And I feel like I can say that to you guys because I have a lot of sales communities. I have the Sales Playbook community over on Facebook. I have the Sales Playbook community over on LinkedIn with 62,000 people in it. I have the sales community with all my followers over on Twitter. I have 112,000 followers over there. And I put questions out to you guys. And one of the questions I put out several times is, have you changed your approach? Or is it, you know, did you continue doing what you've always done? I'm usually at about 70% of the respondents are telling me they're still doing the same shit they did before the pandemic. I've seen other instances where a lot of you have buried your head in the sand. And I get it. When I get scared, you know, there's times I want to run for my life too. But 7 months in, if you haven't changed your approach, whether in how you hunt for business or how you get this business across the finish line, especially right now, folks, we are in the key moment of the game. We are in the final quarter right now. So if ever there was a time for you guys to change something, it would be right now. I'm going to step off the soapbox and give you the link. If you go to yoursalesplaybook.com/closemore, you can get all the juicy details. yoursalesplaybook.com/closemore. With that, I'm Paul Castain from yoursalesplaybook.com. I am wishing you an incredible week ahead. Go get them. The Sales Playbook Podcast is a Castain Training Systems production. Subscribe to my free sales tips by visiting yoursalesplaybook.com/subscribe.